or records in contemplation of an investigation or proceeding does not require the nexus showing under Aguilar, which Section 1512(c)(2) demands. C.E.G. United States v. Yielding, 657 F3D 688, 712, 8th Circuit, 2011. The requisite knowledge and intent under Section 1519 can be present even if the accused lacks knowledge that he is likely to succeed in obstructing the matter. United States v. Gray, 642 F3D 371, 376-377, 2nd Circuit, 2011. In enacting Section 1519, Congress rejected any requirement that the government prove a link between a defendant's conduct and an imminent or pending official proceeding. The existence of even substantial overlap is not uncommon in criminal statutes. Loughran, 573 U.S. at 359 N4. C. Shaw, 137 S. C.T. at 458-469. Aguilar, 515 U.S. at 616. Scalia, J., dissenting. The fact that there is now some overlap between Section 1503 and Section 1512 is no more intolerable than the fact that there is some overlap between the Omnibus Clause of Section 1503 and the other provisions of Section 1503 itself. But given that Sections 1503, 1505, and 1519 each reach conduct that Section 1512(c)(2) does not, the overlap provides no reason to give Section 1512(c)(2) an artificially limited construction. See Shaw, 137 S. C.T. at 469, footnote 1080. 3. The legislative history of Section 1512(c)(2) does not justify narrowing its text. Given the straightforward statutory command in Section 1512(c)(2), there is no reason to resort to legislative history. United States v. Gonzalez, 520 U.S. 1, 6, 1997. In any event, the legislative history of Section 1512(c)(2) is not a reason to impose extratextual limitations on its reach. Congress enacted Section 1512(c)(2) as part of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002, Pub. L. No. 107-204, Title Roman numeral 11, Section 1102, 116, Stat. 807. The relevant section of the statute was entitled Tampering with a Record or Otherwise Impeding an Official Proceeding, 116 Stat. 807, emphasis added. That title indicates that Congress intended the two clauses to have independent effect. Section 1512(c) was added as a floor amendment in the Senate and explained as closing a certain loophole with respect to document shredding. See 148 Congressional Record S6545, July 10, 2002. Senator Lott, id. At S6549-S6550. Senator Hatch. But those explanations do not limit the enacted text. See Pittston Coal Group v. Sebin, 488 U.S. 105, 115, 1988. It is not the law that a statute can have no effects which are not explicitly mentioned in its legislative history. See also Encino Motor Cars, LLC, v. Navarro, 138 S. C.T., 1134-1143, 2018. Even if Congress did not foresee all of the applications of the statute, that is no reason not to give the statutory text a fair reading. The floor statements thus cannot detract from the meaning of the enacted text. See Barnhart v. Sigmund Coal Company, 534 U.S. 438, 457, 2002, Floor statements from two senators cannot amend the clear and unambiguous language of a statute. We see no reason to give greater weight to the views of two senators than to the collective votes of both houses, which are memorialized in the unambiguous statutory text. That principle has particular force where one of the proponents of the amendment to Section 1512 introduced his remarks as only briefly elaborating on some of the specific provisions contained in this bill. 148, Congressional Record, S6550, Senator Hatch. Indeed, the language Congress used in Section 1512(c)(2), prohibiting corruptly obstructing, influencing, or impeding any official proceeding, or attempting to do so, parallels a provision that Congress considered years earlier in a bill designed to strengthen protections against witness tampering and obstruction of justice. While the earlier provision is not a direct antecedent of Section 1512(c)(2), Congress's understanding of the broad scope of the earlier provision is instructive. Recognizing that the proper administration of justice may be impeded or thwarted by a variety of corrupt methods, limited only by the imagination of the criminally inclined, S. Rep. Number 532, 97th Cong, 2nd Session, 17-18, 1982, Congress considered a bill that would have amended Section 1512 by making it a crime, inter alia, when a person corruptly influences, obstructs, or impedes the enforcement and prosecution of federal law, administration of a law under which an official proceeding is being or may be conducted, or the exercise of a federal legislative power of inquiry, id, at 17-19, quoting S. 2420. The Senate committee explained that the purpose of preventing an obstruction of or miscarriage of justice cannot be fully carried out by a simple enumeration of the commonly prosecuted obstruction offenses. There must also be protection against the rare type of conduct that is the product of the inventive criminal mind and which also thwarts justice. Id at 18. The report gave examples of conduct actually prosecuted under the current residual clause in 18 U.S.C. Section 1503, which would probably not be covered in this series of provisions without a residual clause. Id. One prominent example was a conspiracy to cover up the Watergate burglary and its aftermath by having the Central Intelligence Agency seek to interfere with an ongoing FBI investigation of the burglary. Id. Citing United States v. Haldeman, 559 F2D 31, D.C. Circuit 1976. The report, therefore, indicates a congressional awareness not only that residual clause language resembling Section 1512(c)(2) broadly covers a wide variety of obstructive conduct, but also that such language reaches the improper use of governmental processes to obstruct justice, specifically the Watergate cover-up orchestrated by White House officials, including the president himself. See Haldeman, 559 F3D at 51, 86-87, 120-129, 162, footnote 1081. 4. General principles of statutory construction do not suggest that Section 1512(c)(2) is inapplicable to the conduct in this investigation. The requirement of fair warning in criminal law, the interest in avoiding due process concerns in potentially vague statutes, and the rule of lenity do not justify narrowing the reach of Section 1512(c)(2)'s text. Footnote 1082. A. As with other criminal laws, the Supreme Court has exercised restraint in interpreting obstruction of justice provisions, both out of respect for Congress's role in defining crimes and in the interest of providing individuals with fair warning of what a criminal statute prohibits. Marinello v. United States, 138 S.C.T. 1101, 1106, 2018. Arthur Anderson, 5:44 U.S. at 7:03. Aguilar, 5:15 U.S. at 5:99 to 6:02. In several obstruction cases, the court has imposed a nexus test that requires that the wrongful conduct targeted by the provision be sufficiently connected to an official proceeding to ensure the requisite culpability. Marinello, 138 SCT at 11:09, Arthur Anderson, 5:44 U.S. at 7:07 to 7:08, Aguilar, 5:15 U.S. at 600 to 6:02. Section 1512(c)(2) has been interpreted to require a similar nexus. See, e.g., United States v. Young, 916 F3D, 368, 386, 4th Circuit, 2019, United States v. Petrick, 781 F3D, 438, 445, 8th Circuit, 2015, United States v. Phillips, 583 F3D, 1261, 1264, 10th Circuit, 2009, United States v. Reich, 479 F3D 179, 186, 2nd Circuit, 2007. To satisfy the nexus requirement, the government must show as an objective matter that a defendant acted in a manner that is likely to obstruct justice, such that the statute excludes defendants who have an evil purpose but use means that would only unnaturally and improbably be successful. Aguilar, 5:15 U.S. at 6:01 to 6:02, internal quotation marks omitted. See id at 5:99. The endeavor must have the natural and probable effect of interfering with the due administration of justice. Internal quotation marks omitted. The government must also show as a subjective matter that the actor contemplated a particular foreseeable proceeding. Petrick, 781, F3D at 445. Those requirements alleviate fair warning concerns by ensuring that obstructive conduct has a close enough connection to existing or future proceedings to implicate the dangers targeted by the obstruction laws, and that the individual actually has the obstructive result in mind. B. Courts also seek to construe statutes to avoid due process vagueness concerns. See, e.g., McDonnell v. United States, 136 SCT, 2355, 2373, 2016. Skilling v. United States, 561 U.S. 358, 368, 402-404, 2010. Vagueness doctrine requires that a statute define a crime with sufficient definiteness that ordinary people can understand what conduct is prohibited and in a manner that does not encourage arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement. Id at 402-403, internal quotation marks omitted. The obstruction statute's requirement of acting corruptly satisfies that test. Acting corruptly within the meaning of Section 1512(c)(2) means acting with an improper purpose and to engage in conduct knowingly and dishonestly with a specific intent to subvert, impede, or obstruct the relevant proceeding. United States v. Gordon, 710 F3D, 1124, 1151, 10th Circuit, 2013, some quotation marks omitted. The majority opinion in Aguilar did not address the defendant's vagueness challenge to the word corruptly, 515 U.S. at 600 N. 1. But Justice Scalia's separate opinion did reach that issue and would have rejected the challenge, id at 616 to 617. Scalia, J., joined by Kennedy and Thomas, J.J., concurring in part and dissenting in part. Statutory language need not be colloquial, Justice Scalia explained, and the term corruptly in criminal laws has a long-standing and well-accepted meaning. It denotes an act done with an intent to give some advantage inconsistent with official duty and the rights of others. Id at 616, internal quotation marks omitted, citing lower court authority and legal dictionaries. Justice Scalia added that, in the context of obstructing jury proceedings, any claim of ignorance of wrongdoing is incredible. Id at 617. Lower courts have also rejected vagueness challenges to the word corruptly. C.E.G. United States v. Edwards, 869 F3D 490, 501-502, 7th Circuit, 2017. United States v. Brenson, 104 F3D 1267, 1280-1281, 11th Circuit, 1997. United States v. Howard, 569 F2D 1331, 1336 N9, 5th Circuit, 1978. This well-established intent standard precludes the need to limit the obstruction statutes to only certain kinds of inherently wrongful conduct. Footnote 1083. C. Finally, the rule of lenity does not justify treating Section 1512c2 as a prohibition on evidence impairment, as opposed to an omnibus clause. The rule of lenity is an interpretive principle that resolves ambiguity in criminal laws in favor of the less severe construction. Cleveland v. United States, 531 U.S. 12, 25, 2000. As the court has repeatedly emphasized, however, the rule of lenity applies only if, after considering text, structure, history, and purpose, there remains a grievous ambiguity or uncertainty in the statute, such that the court must simply guess as to what Congress intended. Abramsky v. United States, 573 U.S. 169, 188 N. 10, 2014, internal quotation marks omitted. The rule has been cited, for example, in adopting a narrow meaning of tangible object in an obstruction statute when the prohibition's title, history, and list of prohibited acts indicated a focus on destruction of records. See Yates v. United States, 135 SCT 1074, 1088, 2015, plurality opinion, interpreting tangible object in the phrase record, document, or tangible object in 18 U.S.C. section 1519 to mean an item capable of recording or preserving information. Here, as discussed above, the text, structure, and history of section 1512c2 leaves no grievous ambiguity about the statute's meaning. Section 1512c2 defines a structurally independent general prohibition on obstruction of official proceedings. 5. Other obstruction statutes might apply to the conduct in this investigation. Regardless whether Section 1512c2 covers all corrupt acts that obstruct, influence, or impede pending or contemplated proceedings, other statutes would apply to such conduct in pending proceedings, provided that the remaining statutory elements are satisfied. As discussed above, the Omnibus Clause in 18 U.S.C. Section 1503A applies generally to obstruction of pending judicial and grand proceedings. Footnote 1084. See Aguilar, 515 U.S. at 598, noting that the clause is far more general in scope than preceding provisions. Section 1503A's protections extend to witness tampering and to other obstructive conduct that has a nexus to pending proceedings. See Sampson, 898 F3D, at 298-303, and N6, collecting cases from 8 circuits holding that Section 1503 covers witness-related obstructive conduct and cabining prior circuit authority. And Section 1505 broadly criminalizes obstructive conduct aimed at pending agency and congressional proceedings. Footnote 1085. C.E.G. United States v. Rainey, 757 F3D 234, 241 to 247, 5th Circuit, 2014. Finally, 18 U.S.C. Section 1512b3 criminalizes tampering with witnesses to prevent the communication of information about a crime to law enforcement. The nexus inquiry articulated in Aguilar, that an individual has knowledge that his actions are likely to affect the judicial proceeding, 515 U.S. at 599, does not apply to Section 1512b3. See United States v. Byrne, 435 F3D, 16, 24-25, 1st Circuit, 2006. The nexus inquiry turns instead on the actor's intent to prevent communications to a federal law enforcement official. See Fowler v. United States, 563 U.S. 668, 673-678, 2011. In sum, in light of the breadth of Section 1512c2 and the other obstruction statutes, an argument that the conduct at issue in this investigation falls outside the scope of the obstruction laws lacks merit. B. Constitutional defenses to applying obstruction of justice statutes to presidential conduct. The president has broad discretion to direct criminal investigations. The Constitution vests the executive power in the president and enjoins him to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. U.S. Constitution Article 2, Sections 1, 3. Those powers and duties form the foundation of prosecutorial discretion. See United States v. Armstrong, 517 U.S., 456, 464, 1996. Attorney General and United States Attorneys have this latitude because they are designated by statute as the President's delegates to help him discharge his constitutional responsibility to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. The President also has authority to appoint officers of the United States and to remove those whom he has appointed. U.S. Constitution, Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2. Granting authority to the President to appoint all officers with the advice and consent of the Senate, but providing that Congress may vest the appointment of inferior officers in the President alone, the heads of departments, or the courts of law. See also Free Enterprise Fund v. Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, 561 U.S. 477, 492-493, 509, 2010, describing removal authority as flowing from the President's responsibility to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. Although the President has broad authority under Article 2, that authority coexists with Congress's Article 1 power to enact laws that protect congressional proceedings, federal investigations, the courts, and grand juries against corrupt efforts to undermine their functions. Usually, those constitutional powers function in harmony, with the President enforcing the criminal laws under Article 2 to protect against corrupt, obstructive acts. But when the President's official actions come into conflict with the prohibitions in the obstruction statutes, any constitutional tension is reconciled through separation of powers analysis. The President's counsel has argued that the President's exercise of his constitutional authority to terminate an FBI director and to close investigations cannot constitutionally constitute obstruction of justice. Footnote 1086. As noted above, no Department of Justice position or Supreme Court precedent directly resolved this issue. We did not find counsel's contention, however, to accord with our reading of the Supreme Court authority addressing separation of powers issues. Applying the court's framework for analysis, we concluded that Congress can validly regulate the President's exercise of official duties to prohibit actions motivated by a corrupt intent to obstruct justice. The limited effect on presidential power that results from that restriction would not impermissibly undermine the President's ability to perform his Article 2 functions. 1. The requirement of a clear statement to apply statutes to presidential conduct does not limit the obstruction statutes. Before addressing Article II issues directly, we consider one threshold statutory construction principle that is unique to the presidency. The principle that general statutes must be read as not applying to the president if they do not expressly apply where application would arguably limit the president's constitutional role. OLC, application of 28 U.S.C., section 458, to presidential appointments of federal judges. 19, opinion of office legal counsel, 350, 352, 1995. This clear statement rule, id, has its source in two principles. Statutes should be construed to avoid serious constitutional questions, and Congress should not be assumed to have altered the constitutional separation of powers without clear assurance that it intended that result. OLC, the constitutional separation of powers between the President and Congress. 20, opinion of Office of Legal Counsel, 124, 178, 1996. The Supreme Court has applied that clear statement rule in several cases. In one leading case, the court construed the Administrative Procedure Act, 5 U.S.C., section 701, et seq., not to apply to judicial review of presidential action. Franklin v. Massachusetts, 505 U.S. 788, 800-801, 1992. The court explained that it would require an express statement by Congress before assuming it intended the president's performance of his statutory duties to be reviewed for abuse of discretion, id, at 801. In another case, the court interpreted the word utilized in the Federal Advisory Committee Act, FACA, 5 U.S.C. App, to apply only to the use of advisory committees established directly or indirectly by the government, thereby excluding the American Bar Association's advice to the Department of Justice about federal judicial candidates. Public Citizen v. United States Department of Justice, 491 U.S. 440, 455, 462-467, 1989. The court explained that a broader interpretation of the term utilized in FACA would raise serious questions whether the statute infringed unduly on the president's Article II power to nominate federal judges and violated the doctrine of separation of powers, id, at 466-467. Another case found that an established canon of statutory construction applied with special force to provisions that would impinge on the president's foreign affairs powers if construed broadly. Sale v. Haitian Centers Council, 509 U.S. 155, 188, 1993, applying the presumption against extraterritorial application to construe the Refugee Act of 1980 as not governing in an overseas context where it could affect foreign and military affairs for which the president has unique responsibility. See application of 28 U.S.C. section 458 to presidential appointments of federal judges. 19, opinion of office legal counsel at 353-354. Discussing Franklin, Public Citizen, and Sale. The Department of Justice has relied on this clear statement principle to interpret certain statutes as not applying to the president at all, similar to the approach taken in Franklin. See, e.g., Memorandum for Richard T. Burris, Office of the President, from Lawrence H. Silberman, Deputy Attorney General, re. Conflict of Interest Problems Arising Out of the President's Nomination of Nelson A. Rockefeller to be Vice President under the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, at 2, 5, August 28, 1974. Criminal Conflict of Interest Statute, 18 U.S.C., Section 208, does not apply to the President. Other OLC opinions interpret statutory text not to apply to certain presidential or executive actions because of constitutional concerns. See application of 28 U.S.C. section 458 to presidential appointments of federal judges. 19. Opinion of office legal counsel at 350 to 357. Consanguinity limitations on court appointments. 28 U.S.C. section 458 found inapplicable to presidential appointments of judges to the federal judiciary. Constraints imposed by 18 U.S.C. section 1913 on lobbying efforts. 13. Opinion of office legal counsel. 300. 304 to 306, 1989. Limitation on the use of appropriated funds for certain lobbying programs found inapplicable to certain communications by the president and executive officials. But OLC has also recognized that this clear statement rule does not apply with respect to a statute that raises no separation of powers questions were it to be applied to the president, such as the federal bribery statute, 18 U.S.C. section 201. Application of 28 U.S.C. section 458 to presidential appointments of federal judges, 19. Opinion of office of legal counsel. At 357 N 11. OLC explained that application of Section 201 raises no separation of powers question, let alone a serious one, because the Constitution confers no power in the president to receive bribes. Id. In support of that conclusion, OLC noted constitutional provisions that forbid increases in the president's compensation while in office, which is what a bribe would function to do. Id. Citing U.S. Constitution, Article 2, Section 1, Clause 7, and the express constitutional power of Congress to impeach and convict a president for, inter alia, bribery. Id. Citing U.S. Constitution, Article 2, Section 4. Under OLC's analysis, Congress can permissibly criminalize certain obstructive conduct by the president, such as suborning perjury, intimidating witnesses, or fabricating evidence, because those prohibitions raise no separation of powers questions. See application of 28 U.S.C. Section 458 to presidential appointments of federal judges, 19 Opinion of Office Legal Counsel at 357 N 11. The Constitution does not authorize the president to engage in such conduct, and those actions would transgress the president's duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. U.S. Constitution, Article 2, Sections 3. In view of those clearly permissible applications of the obstruction statutes to the president, Franklin's holding that the president is entirely excluded from a statute absent a clear statement would not apply in this context. A more limited application of a clear statement rule to exclude from the obstruction statutes only certain acts by the president, for example, removing prosecutors or ending investigations for corrupt reasons, would be difficult to implement as a matter of statutory interpretation. It is not obvious how a clear statement rule would apply to an omnibus provision like Section 1512(c)(2) to exclude corruptly motivated obstructive acts only when carried out in the president's conduct of office. No statutory term could easily bear that specialized meaning. For example, the word corruptly has a well-established meaning that does not exclude exercises of official power for corrupt ends. Indeed, an established definition states that corruptly means action with an intent to secure an improper advantage, inconsistent with official duty and the rights of others. Ballantine's Law Dictionary, 276, 3rd edition, 1969, emphasis added. And it would be contrary to ordinary rules of statutory construction to adopt an unconventional meaning of a statutory term only when applied to the president. See United States v. Santos, 553 U.S. 507, 522, 2008. Plurality opinion of Scalia, J., rejecting proposal to give the same word in the same statutory provision different meanings in different factual contexts, cf. Public Citizen, 491 U.S. at 462 to 467, giving the term utilized in the FACA a uniform meaning to avoid constitutional questions. Nor could such an exclusion draw on a separate and established background interpretive presumption, such as the presumption against extraterritoriality applied in SAIL. The principle that courts will construe a statute to avoid serious constitutional questions is not a license for the judiciary to rewrite language enacted by the legislature. Salinas v. United States, 522 U.S. 52, 59-60, 1997. It is one thing to acknowledge and accept well-defined, or even newly enunciated, generally applicable, background principles of assumed legislative intent. It is quite another to espouse the broad proposition that criminal statutes do not have to be read as broadly as they are written, but are subject to case-by-case exceptions. Brogan v. United States, 522 U.S., 398-406, 1998. When a proposed construction would thus function as an extratextual limit on a statute's compass, thereby preventing the statute from applying to a host of cases falling within its clear terms, Loughran, 573 U.S. at 357, it is doubtful that the construction would reflect Congress's intent. That is particularly so with respect to obstruction statutes, which have been given a broad and all-inclusive meaning. Rainey, 757 F3D at 245, discussing sections 1503 and 1505, internal quotation marks omitted. Accordingly, since no established principle of interpretation would exclude the presidential conduct we have investigated from statutes such as sections 1503, 1505, 1512b, and 1512c2, we proceed to examine the separation of powers issues that could be raised as an Article II defense to the application of those statutes. 2. Separation of powers principles support the conclusion that Congress may validly prohibit corrupt obstructive acts carried out through the president's official powers. When Congress imposes a limitation on the exercise of Article II powers, the limitation's validity depends on whether the measure disrupts the balance between the coordinate branches. Nixon v. Administrator of General Services, 433 U.S. 425, 443, 1977. Even when a branch does not arrogate power to itself, the separation of powers doctrine requires that a branch not impair another in the performance of its constitutional duties. Loving v. United States, 517 U.S., 748, 757, 1996. The separation of powers does not mean, however, that the branches ought to have no partial agency in or no control over the acts of each other. Clinton v. Jones, 520 U.S., 681, 703, 1997. Quoting James Madison, The Federalist, number 47, pages 325 to 326. J. Cook, editor, 1961. Emphasis omitted. In this context, a balancing test applies to assess separation of powers issues. Applying that test here, we concluded that Congress can validly make obstruction of justice statutes applicable to corruptly motivated official acts of the president without impermissibly undermining his Article II functions. A. The Supreme Court's separation of powers balancing test applies in this context. A congressionally imposed limitation on presidential action is assessed to determine the extent to which it prevents the executive branch from accomplishing its constitutionally assigned functions, and, if the potential for disruption is present, whether that impact is justified by an overriding need to promote objectives within the constitutional authority of Congress. Administrator of General Services, 433 U.S. at 443. See Nixon v. Fitzgerald, 457 U.S., 731, 753 to 754, 1982. United States v. Nixon, 418 U.S. 683, 706 to 707, 1974. That balancing test applies to a congressional regulation of presidential power through the obstruction of justice laws, footnote 1087. When an Article II power has not been explicitly assigned by the text of the Constitution to be within the sole province of the president, but rather was thought to be encompassed within the general grant to the president of the executive power, the court has balanced competing constitutional considerations. Public Citizen, 491 U.S. at 484. Kennedy, J., concurring in the judgment, joined by Rehnquist, C.J., and O'Connor, J. As Justice Kennedy noted in Public Citizen, the court has applied a balancing test to restrictions on the president's power to remove executive officers, a power that is not conferred by any explicit provision in the text of the Constitution, as is the appointment power, but rather is inferred to be a necessary part of the grant of the executive power. Id, citing Morrison v. Olson, 487 U.S. 654, 694, 1988, and Myers v. United States, 272 U.S. 52, 115 to 116, 1926. Consistent with that statement, Morrison sustained a good cause limitation on the removal of an inferior officer with defined prosecutorial responsibilities after determining that the limitation did not impermissibly undermine the president's ability to perform his Article II functions. 487 U.S. at 691 to 693, 695 to 696. The court has also evaluated other general executive power claims through a balancing test. For example, the court evaluated the president's claim of an absolute privilege for presidential communications about his official acts by balancing that interest against the judicial branch's need for evidence in a criminal case. United States v. Nixon, Supra, recognizing a qualified constitutional privilege for presidential communications on official matters. The court has also upheld a law that provided for archival access to presidential records despite a claim of absolute presidential privilege over the records. Administrator of General Services, 433 U.S. at 443 to 445, 451 to 455. The analysis in those cases supports applying a balancing test to assess the constitutionality of applying the obstruction of justice statutes to presidential exercises of executive power. Only in a few instances has the court applied a different framework. When the president's power is both exclusive and conclusive on the issue, Congress is precluded from regulating its exercise. Zivotofsky v. Carey, 135 SCT, 2076, 2084, 2015. In Zivotofsky, for example, the court followed Justice Jackson's familiar tripartite framework in Youngstown Sheet and Tube Co. v. Sawyer, 343 U.S. 579, 635 to 638, 1952. Jackson J. concurring, and held that the president's authority to recognize foreign nations is exclusive. Id. At 2083, 2094. See also Public Citizen 491 U.S. at 485 to 486. Kennedy J., concurring in the judgment, citing the power to grant pardons under U.S. Constitution, Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1, and the presentment clauses for legislation, U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 7, Clauses 2, 3, as examples of exclusive presidential powers by virtue of constitutional text. But even when a power is exclusive, Congress powers and its central role in making laws give it substantial authority regarding many of the policy determinations that precede and follow the President's Act. Zivotofsky, 135 SCT at 2087. For example, Although the president's power to grant pardons is exclusive and not subject to congressional regulation, see United States v. Klein, 80 U.S., 13 Wall, 128, 147 to 148, 1872, Congress has the authority to prohibit the corrupt use of anything of value to influence the testimony of another person in a judicial, congressional, or agency proceeding, 18 U.S.C., Section 201(b)(3), which would include the offer or promise of a pardon to induce a person to testify falsely or not to testify at all. The offer of a pardon would precede the act of pardoning and thus be within Congress's power to regulate, even if the pardon itself is not. Just as the Speech or Debate Clause, U.S. Constitution Article 1, Section 6, Clause 1, absolutely protects legislative acts, but not a legislator's taking or agreeing to money for a promise to act in a certain way, for it is taking the bribe, not performance of the illicit compact, that is a criminal act. United States v. Brewster, 408 U.S. 501, 526, 1972, emphasis omitted. The promise of a pardon to corruptly influence testimony would not be a constitutionally immunized act. The application of obstruction statutes to such promises, therefore, would raise no serious separation of powers issue. B. The effect of obstruction of justice statutes on the president's capacity to perform his Article II responsibilities is limited. Under the Supreme Court's balancing test for analyzing separation of powers issues, the first task is to assess the degree to which applying obstruction of justice statutes to presidential actions affects the president's ability to carry out his Article II responsibilities. Administrator of General Services, 433 U.S. at 443. As discussed above, applying obstruction of justice statutes to presidential conduct that does not involve the president's conduct of office, such as influencing the testimony of witnesses, is constitutionally unproblematic. The president has no more right than other citizens to impede official proceedings by corruptly influencing witness testimony. The conduct would be equally improper whether effectuated through direct efforts to produce false testimony or suppress the truth, or through the actual, threatened, or promised use of official powers to achieve the same result. The president's action in curtailing criminal investigations or prosecutions, or discharging law enforcement officials, raises different questions. Each type of action involves the exercise of executive discretion in furtherance of the president's duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. U.S. Constitution, Article 2, Section 3. Congress may not supplant the president's exercise of executive power to supervise prosecutions or to remove officers who occupy law enforcement positions. See Bosher v. Sinar, 478 U.S., 714, 726 to 727, 1986. Congress cannot reserve for itself the power of removal of an officer charged with the execution of the laws except by impeachment. Because the structure of the Constitution does not permit Congress to execute the laws, this kind of congressional control over the execution of the laws is constitutionally impermissible. Yet the obstruction of justice statutes do not aggrandize power in Congress or usurp executive authority. Instead, they impose a discrete limitation on conduct only when it is taken with the corrupt intent to obstruct justice. The obstruction statutes thus would restrict presidential action only by prohibiting the president from acting to obstruct official proceedings for the improper purpose of protecting his own interests. See Volume 2, Section Roman Numeral 3, A3, Supra. The direct effect on the president's freedom of action would correspondingly be a limited one. A preclusion of corrupt official action is not a major intrusion on Article 2 powers. For example, The proper supervision of criminal law does not demand freedom for the president to act with the intention of shielding himself from criminal punishment, avoiding financial liability, or preventing personal embarrassment. To the contrary, a statute that prohibits official action undertaken for such personal purposes furthers, rather than hinders, the impartial and even-handed administration of the law. And the Constitution does not mandate that the President have unfettered authority to direct investigations or prosecutions, with no limits whatsoever, in order to carry out his Article II functions. See Heckler v. Cheney, 470 U.S. 821, 833, 1985. Congress may limit an agency's exercise of enforcement power if it wishes, either by setting substantive priorities or by otherwise circumscribing an agency's power to discriminate among issues or cases it will pursue. United States v. Nixon, 418 U.S. at 707. To read the Article II powers of the President as providing an absolute privilege to withhold confidential communications from a criminal trial would upset the constitutional balance of a workable government and gravely impair the role of the courts under Article III. Nor must the President have unfettered authority to remove all executive branch officials involved in the execution of the laws. The Constitution establishes that Congress has legislative authority to structure the executive branch by authorizing Congress to create executive departments and officer positions, and to specify how inferior officers are appointed, e.g., U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, Necessary and Proper Clause, Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1, Opinions Clause, Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2, Appointments Clause. See Free Enterprise Fund, 561 U.S. at 499. While the President's removal power is an important means of ensuring that officers faithfully execute the law, Congress has a recognized authority to place certain limits on removal, id. At 493 to 495. The President's removal powers are at their zenith with respect to principal officers, that is, officers who must be appointed by the President and who report to him directly. See Free Enterprise Fund, 561 U.S. at 493, 500. The President's exclusive and illimitable power of removal of those principal officers furthers the President's ability to ensure that the laws are faithfully executed. Id. At 493, 498, internal quotation marks omitted. Myers, 272 U.S. at 627. Thus, there are some purely executive officials who must be removable by the President at will if he is able to accomplish his constitutional role. Morrison, 487 U.S. at 690. Myers, 272 U.S. at 134. The President's cabinet officers must do his will, and the moment that he loses confidence in the intelligence, ability, judgment, or loyalty of any one of them, he must have the power to remove him without delay. CF Humphrey's Executor v. United States, 295 U.S. 602, 1935. Congress has the power to create independent agencies headed by principal officers removable only for good cause. In light of those constitutional precedents, it may be that the obstruction statutes could not be constitutionally applied to limit the removal of a cabinet officer, such as the Attorney General. See 5 U.S.C. Section 101, 28 U.S.C. Section 503. In that context, at least absent circumstances showing that the President was clearly attempting to thwart accountability for personal conduct while evading ordinary political checks and balances, even the highly limited regulation imposed by the obstruction statutes could possibly intrude too deeply on the President's freedom to select and supervise the members of his cabinet. The removal of inferior officers, in contrast, need not necessarily be at will for the president to fulfill his constitutionally assigned role in managing the executive branch. Inferior officers are officers whose work is directed and supervised at some level by other officers appointed by the president with the Senate's consent. Free Enterprise Fund, 561 U.S. at 510, quoting Edmund v. United States, 520 U.S. 651, 663, 1997. Internal quotation marks omitted. The Supreme Court has long recognized Congress's authority to place for-cause limitations on the president's removal of inferior officers, whose appointment may be vested in the head of a department. U.S. Constitution, Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2. See United States v. Perkins, 116 U.S., 483, 485, 1886. The constitutional authority in Congress to thus vest the appointment of inferior officers in the heads of departments implies authority to limit, restrict, and regulate the removal by such laws as Congress may enact in relation to the officers so appointed, quoting lower court decision, Morrison, 487 U.S. at 689 N27, citing Perkins, Accord ID at 723-724, and N4, Scalia J. dissenting, recognizing that Perkins is established law. See also Free Enterprise Fund, 561 U.S. at 493-495, citing Perkins and Morrison. The category of inferior officers includes both the FBI director and the special counsel, each of whom reports to the Attorney General. See 28 U.S.C., Sections 509, 515A, 531, 28 CFR, Part 600. Their work is thus directed and supervised by a presidentially appointed, Senate-confirmed officer. See In re, Grand Jury Investigation, underscore F3D, underscore. 2019 WL 921692 at asterisk 3 dash asterisk 4. D.C. Circuit, February 26, 2019, holding that the special counsel is an inferior officer for constitutional purposes. Where the Constitution permits Congress to impose a good cause limitation on the removal of an executive branch officer, the Constitution should equally permit Congress to bar removal for the corrupt purpose of obstructing justice. Limiting the range of permissible reasons for removal to exclude a corrupt purpose imposes a lesser restraint on the President than requiring an affirmative showing of good cause. It follows that for such inferior officers, Congress may constitutionally restrict the president's removal authority if that authority was exercised for the corrupt purpose of obstructing justice. And even if a particular inferior officer's position might be of such importance to the execution of the laws that the president must have at-will removal authority, the obstruction of justice statutes could still be constitutionally applied to forbid removal for a corrupt reason. Footnote 1088. A narrow and discreet limitation on removal that precluded corrupt action would leave ample room for all other considerations, including disagreement over policy or loss of confidence in the officer's judgment or commitment. A corrupt purpose prohibition, therefore, would not undermine the president's ability to perform his Article II functions. Accordingly, because the separation of powers question is whether the removal restrictions are of such a nature that they impede the president's ability to perform his constitutional duty. Morrison, 487 U.S. at 691. A restriction on removing an inferior officer for a corrupt reason, a reason grounded in achieving personal rather than official ends, does not seriously hinder the president's performance of his duties. The president retains broad latitude to supervise investigations and remove officials, circumscribed in this context only by the requirement that he not act for corrupt personal purposes. footnote 1089. C. Congress has power to protect congressional, grand jury, and judicial proceedings against corrupt acts from any source. Where a law imposes a burden on the president's performance of Article II functions, separation of powers analysis considers whether the statutory measure is justified by an overriding need to promote objectives within the constitutional authority of Congress. Administrator of General Services, 433 U.S. at 443. Here, Congress enacted the obstruction of justice statutes to protect, among other things, the integrity of its own proceedings, grand jury investigations, and federal criminal trials. Those objectives are within Congress's authority and serve strong governmental interests. Small Roman numeral 1. Congress has Article 1 authority to define generally applicable criminal law and apply it to all persons, including the president. Congress clearly has authority to protect its own legislative functions against corrupt efforts designed to impede legitimate fact-gathering and lawmaking efforts. See Watkins v. United States, 354 U.S. 178, 187, 206-207, 1957. Chapman v. United States, 5 App D.C. 122, 130, 1895. Congress also has authority to establish a system of federal courts, which includes the power to protect the judiciary against obstructive acts. See U.S. Constitution Article 1, Section 8, Clauses 9, 18. The Congress shall have power to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court, and to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers. The long lineage of the obstruction of justice statutes, which can be traced to at least 1831, attests to the necessity for that protection. See An Act Declaratory of the Law Concerning Contempts of Court, 4 Stat, 487-488, Section 2, 1831, making it a crime if any person or persons shall corruptly endeavor to influence, intimidate, or impede any juror, witness, or officer in any court of the United States in the discharge of his duty, or shall corruptly obstruct or impede, or endeavor to obstruct or impede, the due administration of justice therein. Small Roman numeral 2. The Article 3 courts have an equally strong interest in being protected against obstructive acts, whatever their source. As the Supreme Court explained in United States v. Nixon, a primary constitutional duty of the judicial branch is to do justice in criminal prosecutions, 418 U.S. at 707, Accord Cheney v. United States District Court for the District of Columbia, 542 U.S. 367, 384, 2004. In Nixon, the court rejected the president's claim of absolute executive privilege because the allowance of the privilege to withhold evidence that is demonstrably relevant in a criminal trial would cut deeply into the guarantee of due process of law and gravely impair the basic function of the courts. 407 U.S. at 712. As Nixon illustrates, the need to safeguard judicial integrity is a compelling constitutional interest. See id at 709, noting that the denial of full disclosure of the facts surrounding relevant presidential communications threatens the very integrity of the judicial system and public confidence in the system. Small Roman numeral 3. Finally, the grand jury cannot achieve its constitutional purpose absent protection from corrupt acts. Serious federal criminal charges generally reach the Article III courts based on an indictment issued by a grand jury. Cobbledick v. United States, 309 U.S. 323, 327, 1940. The Constitution itself makes the grand jury a part of the judicial process, and the grand jury's function is enshrined in the Fifth Amendment, U.S. Constitution Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a serious crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury. The whole theory of the grand jury's function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of buffer or referee between the government and the people. United States v. Williams, 504 U.S. 36, 47, 1992, pledged to indict no one because of prejudice and to free no one because of special favor. Costello v. United States, 350 U.S. 359, 362, 1956. If the grand jury were not protected against corrupt interference from all persons, its function as an independent charging body would be thwarted, and an impartial grand jury investigation to determine whether probable cause exists to indict is vital to the criminal justice process. The final step in the constitutional balancing process is to assess whether the separation of powers doctrine permits Congress to take action within its constitutional authority, notwithstanding the potential impact on Article II functions. See Administrator of General Services, 433 U.S. at 443. See also Morrison, 487 U.S. at 691 to 693, 695 to 696. United States v. Nixon, 418 U.S. at 711 to 712. In the case of the obstruction of justice statutes, our assessment of the weighing of interests leads us to conclude that Congress has the authority to impose the limited restrictions contained in those statutes on the President's official conduct to protect the integrity of important functions of other branches of government. A general ban on corrupt action does not unduly intrude on the President's responsibility to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. U.S. Constitution, Article 2, Sections 3, footnote 1090. To the contrary, the concept of faithful execution connotes the use of power in the interest of the public, not in the officeholder's personal interests. See 1 Samuel Johnson, A Dictionary of the English Language, 763, 1755. Faithfully, Definition 3. With strict adherence to duty and allegiance, and immunizing the President from the generally applicable criminal prohibition against corrupt obstruction of official proceedings would seriously impair Congress's power to enact laws to promote objectives within its constitutional authority. Administrator of General Services, 433 U.S. at 425, i.e., protecting the integrity of its own proceedings and the proceedings of Article III courts and grand juries. Accordingly, based on the analysis above, we were not persuaded by the argument that the President has blanket constitutional immunity to engage in acts that would corruptly obstruct justice through the exercise of otherwise valid Article II powers. Footnote 1091. 3. Ascertaining whether the President violated the obstruction statutes would not chill his performance of his Article II duties. Applying the obstruction statutes to the President's official conduct would involve determining as a factual matter whether he engaged in an obstructive act, whether the act had a nexus to official proceedings, and whether he was motivated by corrupt intent. But applying those standards to the President's official conduct should not hinder his ability to perform his Article II duties. Cf. Nixon v. Fitzgerald, 457 U.S. at 752 to 753, and N32, taking into account chilling effect on the President in adopting a constitutional rule of presidential immunity from private civil damages action based on official duties. Several safeguards would prevent a chilling effect: the existence of settled legal standards, the presumption of regularity in prosecutorial actions, and the existence of evidentiary limitations on probing the President's motives. And historical experience confirms that no impermissible chill should exist. A. As an initial matter, the term corruptly sets a demanding standard. It requires a concrete showing that a person acted with an intent to obtain an improper advantage for himself or someone else, inconsistent with official duty and the rights of others. Ballantine's Law Dictionary, 276, 3rd edition, 1969. See United States v. Pasha, 797 F3D, 1122, 1132, D.C. Circuit, 2015. Aguilar, 515 U.S. at 616. Scalia J., concurring in part and dissenting in part. That standard parallels the president's constitutional obligation to ensure the faithful execution of the laws, and virtually everything that the president does in the routine conduct of office will have a clear governmental purpose and will not be contrary to his official duty. Accordingly, the president has no reason to be chilled in those actions, because in virtually all instances, there will be no credible basis for suspecting a corrupt personal motive. That point is illustrated by examples of conduct that would and would not satisfy the stringent corrupt motive standard. Direct or indirect action by the president to end a criminal investigation into his own or his family member's conduct to protect against personal embarrassment or legal liability would constitute a core example of corruptly motivated conduct. So too would action to halt an enforcement proceeding that directly and adversely affected the president's financial interests for the purpose of protecting those interests. In those examples, official power is being used for the purpose of protecting the president's personal interests. In contrast, the president's actions to serve political or policy interests would not qualify as corrupt. The president's role as head of the government necessarily requires him to take into account political factors in making policy decisions that affect law enforcement actions and proceedings. For instance, the president's decision to curtail a law enforcement investigation to avoid international friction would not implicate the obstruction of justice statutes. The criminal law does not seek to regulate the consideration of such political or policy factors in the conduct of government. And when legitimate interests animate the president's conduct,